Welcome to the Subject Composition and Light Photography Podcast. Show notes can be found at www.robnunphoto.com. That's www.robnunphoto.com. SEL is proud to be sponsored by Mosey Pro and GoToMeeting. Now, on with the show. Hi everybody, I hope everybody's had a great photographic week. It's Sunday, it's about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and it's the 15th of January 2012, so it must mean it's time for another episode of SCL, the Subject Composition and Light Photography Podcast. Being a Sunday, been down the car boot sales this morning in Bridgebury, unfortunately. Not much there today, really. There was the odd little film compact camera, but nothing that really caught my eye. But I have been out for a nice long photo walk around Rauner and Gosport this afternoon. You may remember last week I was talking about the idea of moving away from doing long projects about specific themes, and rather just thinking about locations and places. So it's really going back to the idea of the photo walk. So like, I'm going to go and visit this place. I'm going to walk around it looking for things that catch my eye, but also maybe trying to tell a little bit of a story. And when I'm thinking about that, I'm really thinking about how I will take, you know, like a wide photo, which encapsulates a lot of the scene, and then start going in for details. So, for example, Rauner is an area of Gosport that's traditionally been used for things like married quarters, which are military accommodation, back in the sort of 50s and 60s. But as the military have moved out, it turned into council flats and things like that, and it became very run down. But there's a whole regeneration scheme going on. And part of that is recently sort of some of the married quarters have all been boarded up. And they're all being redone. They're all being improved inside, which is so. In essence, it's a good story because this old housing stock is being given new life. But at the moment, it looks a bit of an eyesore. So look out for a post with a few of these photographs in, and I'll try and put them up on my Flickr photo stream this week. But what I did was I started off and I thought, well, I know what the story's going to be. It's going to be about these old houses that have sort of been ripped out and they're boarded up, and there's rubble in the street and that sort of thing. So I knew that I wanted a few wide shots to try and put the houses in their context of where they are and how many of these houses. It's not just doing one, it's like a whole row of the street, and then going in for the detail on things like ripped apart satellites and things. But what made it for me this afternoon was the fact that the light was really, really good. You know, it's that typical winter mid-afternoon light with the sun's fairly low, nice blue sky. And although I took all the shots on my 350D Canon DSLR in colour, I know that those sorts of photographs always look great in black and white as well, because they're the circumstances where the camera and the lenses I've got, they perform exceptionally well, because I'm using ISO 100, 200, sometimes creeping into ISO 400, but I was using a lot of the 18-55, but also the 55-250 telephoto lens. But because there was so much light around, I could stop them both down. I wasn't shooting wide open, and they become really sharp there, especially when you're using them in the middle of their focal length rather than the extremes. And I've had a quick look at the photos. I've started geotagging them using Picasa 3, and some of them look quite good, so I'm quite excited about changing them over to some black and white as well. I also had to go and pick some stuff up from Asda down in the centre of Gosport, and went for a little photo walk around the corner, just shooting some of the creek down there, so I'll put those photos up as well. And what I was playing around with there as well was shooting towards the main Portsmouth Harbour, but again using the telephoto lens, the long lens, for landscapes where everything kind of gets compressed, things that appear to be further apart to our eyes, or a wider angle lens with a telephoto lens, because you're zooming in on the scene and yet you're still far away, the relative distance between the subjects is closer, and so you can kind of compress the scene, so that's quite good. But it's time for a little break, and it's time for the first of our sponsors today, which is GoToMeeting. If you've ever had to organise a meeting when the weather's bad, as it normally is at this time of year, you'll know how difficult it can be. People are ill, people get stuck, people can't make it in, you get, oh, I'm really sorry, but I can't make it in. But to you, it's something that's very, very important. But the beauty of using software like GoToMeeting is the fact that you can have a conference call using your PC, using voice over internet to get everybody together. And now that GoToMeeting have HD faces, you can also use your webcam so everybody can see each other as well. In essence, imagine you've got, I don't know, six people in a meeting. You're all sitting there in front of your laptops or your desktops, or on your Android phones or on your iPhones or on your iPads all over the world. And they can all see your desktop. And the people on the computers can also see you physically with your face, and you can see them using the HD faces teleconferencing, and you can show them the sales figures, you can show them the minutes for the meeting, you can show them the plans and the ideas you've got to drive your business forward. But don't take my word for it, head on over to GoToMeeting.com, click on the try it free button and use the promo code podcast, and you can give it a go for 30 days. That's GoToMeeting.com, the try it free button and the promo code podcast, and you can try it out for 30 days. What I've been doing this week as well is taking my DSLR, the 350D, to work every day as well. I've always got my Trip 35 in my jacket pocket, because the beauty of that particular small film camera is that it doesn't need any batteries. As long as it's got some film in it, it's good to go. But I thought, you know, there's times when it'd be nice, instead of sort of sitting down and just reading my RSS feeds on my phone at lunchtime, if I do get a lunch break, but rather to take a short photo walk, because where we are in Portsmouth, there are a couple of interesting things. There's like a urban farm down the road, and there's all these old buildings, and Portsmouth as a whole, as a city, is pretty compact. It's not very big at all. So, you know, 5 minutes drive away, there's all sorts of interesting things. So I thought the beginning to that, the first step was to actually take my camera with me. So I've been taking the 350D, and there's a few shots up on the photo stream of there's a old upholstery building that's empty that I took some black and whites of. And also the other day as well, for some reason there was a budgerigar, a little native Australian bird, I think budgies are from, but lots of people in the UK have them as pets, sitting in a tree outside, which is unusual to say the least. Now, some people were saying that there is actually a colony of budgerigars somewhere in Portland, so maybe he's got separated from them, or maybe it's flown out of somebody's window, but it was just sitting in the tree, so I had my camera, took a few shots, and by throwing all these different situations into the mix, where you're going and taking photographs of things that maybe you don't necessarily would, it gives you more experience with your camera and with the kit you need to know it all. And it means that when you want to put something into action, when you want to visualise a particular shot, you've got the technical skills that enable you to do that, rather than fumbling around thinking, right, how do I do this? Or one of the worst things is you try to do something, you think you've got it, and then you get home and look at it on your computer or on the print on the negative, and like it says, it's blurred, or it's not quite right. So one of the things I'm trying to do now is whenever I'm going out to places like that or going to work, I'll always have the SLR with me just in case. So, you know, why don't you do the same? Another thing I did as well was, because I've got this new laptop now, Oliver's second-hand one, that's a lot more powerful than my desktop, and I've sort of reinstalled Photoshop and all my plugins like the Nick Silverx Pro black and white plugin and the HDR plugin and Photomatics and all this sort of stuff. I'm kind of overwhelmed with all these editing options and things that I can do to photographs to make them more interesting. just like you can on your phone. You know, we take a photograph, and maybe if you've got an iPhone, you're using Hipstamatic, or on the Android, Vignette is a very good one. You know, you take a photograph, you can make it look old, you can make it look black and white, you can make it look like a Polaroid, all these things you can do. But it was kind of bugging me, because what happens is often I'll take a photograph and I think, oh yeah, you know, I'll change that to black and white, I'll make it a bit grainy, I'll add a vignette, you know, I'll add lots of contrast, and I do it and I think, yeah, that's great. But then I look at them a few days, few weeks, few months later, I think, oh, I overdid it a bit. You know, I did too much post-processing on that particular photograph. And I'm not a type of person who goes back and redoes stuff, because I'd rather be out there shooting photographs than sitting in front of a computer editing photographs. So what I did was, I thought, what is my what are one of my favourite photographers, and what is it about their photographs that I like, and how do they do their post-processing? And I picked this time Henri Cartier-Bresson, the famous French photojournalist and street photographer. And obviously what I like about his photographs is the subject matter. It's all sorts of things, mainly photojournalist type stuff, so in China and India, and his street photography around France and different parts of the world. And he's all about geometry and people and the decisive moment. For example, there's a famous photograph he's done of, I think it's on the River Seine, and there's a family having a picnic. And he's kind of standing above them, looking down. They're kind of on the bank of the river, and they're having some baguettes. And I think there's a boat in the river. And he's caught it just as the man is just pouring the wine into the glass. And in quite a few of Henri Cartier-Bresson's photos, you get that. You know, when you look closer, all of a sudden you realise that actually something's happening right there and then that adds more to the photograph. But HCB works mainly in black and white. He did do some colour photography, but you don't really see it that often. And so I went through, I'm lucky enough to have a book of his that's got lots of his photographs in, and I went through sort of checking out what does he do on there, and I made a few notes, because that's kind of given me a little bit of grounding. And so looking at Henri Cartier-Bresson's black and whites, these are my notes from the way he works, is there's never any vignettes added, or if there are, it's probably because of the lens he was using, or maybe his hand was near the lens. It's all about geometry and shapes and people in them as well. They're always simple black and white. There's no, at least I don't think, that there's no toning. There's no sepias. There's no the blue of the cyanotypes. He tends to get in very close to lots of his subjects as well. And again, I've talked about the moments in his photograph. He doesn't worry about the skies too much. You always get the feeling that Henri Cartier-Bresson is about the earth and the people on it, not about the landscapes at all. He uses a normal focal length most of the time. It looks all sort of round about sort of 40 to 50 millimetres. You don't see wide angle or telephoto distortion much in Henri Cartier-Bresson's photos. He's very good at cropping into a scene as well. Again, that's related to getting close. You know, we're talking about, you know, when there's something in front of you, like a building, and you're framing it through your viewfinder, and you're taking your time, and you're checking your composition and stuff like this, far too often we tend to have the whole thing in our photograph. Well, we don't need to. We need to get closer and chop off bits. And he's very good at doing that, and that's something I need to practice on as well. An overlooked part of Henri Cartier-Bresson's photography as well is his portraits. He's the most amazing photographs. And what he tends to do them is he very rarely has the person in the middle. They always tend to go off to a corner, and sometimes it's even the background, the context of where they are, is more important than the person themselves. So they really, you could say lots of them are studies of not only of the person but what's around them. I know there's a name for that, but it's kind of escaped me at the moment. Environmental portrait, that's what I mean. And it's all about light and shadows with his photographs. But he's not afraid, though. If a moment is happening, he will take the pictures then and there. So then I've kind of taken those notes, and I'm keeping them sort of in the back of my mind when I come to edit my photos and take my photos, that they're sort of some of the loose guidelines that I can use to help me not go over the top when I do my post-processing. Time for another break now. We've got Mosey as our second and final sponsor for this week's episode. So, when it comes to running a successful business, there are loads of things that you've got to get right. Hiring good people is just one of them, but one thing that we tend to overlook is protecting the data that powers our businesses. Even something as a spilled drink or leaving your laptop in the back seat of a taxi can spell data loss. Did you know that 32% of all data loss is caused by human error? Even a single incident of data loss isn't cheap. It can cost $10,000 or more to recover data from a single laptop or server that's been damaged. Mosey Pro's secret is that it's unbelievably easy to use and affordable for organisations of all sizes. One example is one advertising executive company lost an entire bank of servers, which nearly brought their business to its knees. Then he found Mosey Pro and he said, "I was shocked at how fast it works, and their people know how to work with Macintoshes too." If you're not backing up your business data with Mosey Pro, here is a reason you should consider Mosey Pro to back up your business data. Mosey Pro works on both PCs and Macs, and also is good for backing up servers as well. So it kind of covers everything, all the computer options that could happen within your organisation. And if your business is not backed up with Mosey Pro, you really need to make sure your data is backed up. So what I'd like you to do is give our friends at Mosey a call. They've been doing this a very long time and run the most secure, most trusted online backup service. Right now you can save 15% on the site by using the promo code PODCAST15. So in the States, call 877-699-9776. That's 877-699-776, or visit Mosey Pro, and that's MOZYPRO.com. And give them a try and said we send. So this week's main topic is the December assignment review. I know we're into the middle of January by now, but I thought it was time we went through and had a look at what we did for December's assignment, which was abstract macro, and start thinking about what we're going to do for this year's assignment. So let's dive straight in and look at the photos. I'll put a link in the show notes to the particular thread, but if you just head on over to the robnunphoto.com, click a photo group, you'll see it's near the top of the list of topics there. The first person who dived in and got his images in the thread was Photos by Danny B, and he's got a couple of really interesting macro shots by macro. All we're using for this, we're just saying real close-up shots. I think they're cooker rings. I think the bottom one of the two, of the first ones he put up, is definitely a cooker ring that's nice and hot. And the top one is, I'm not sure to be honest, because it looks like a cooker ring that's off, but there's light underneath. So it may be some sort of gas ring, I don't know. But there, I like the curves, I like the colours, I like the shapes. I remember what most of these assignments are all about as well is getting you to practice. You know? So by practicing macro shots, it means if you're out and about and you see a nice flower or a nice insect, you know what to do. You know, you've had a go before in the safe environment of your own home where it's nice and warm. And you can get your kit out and you can take that macro shot. There's a couple from me. And then GNeil45 has done a nice close-up of a tree decoration. It's a small present wrapped with a bow of glittery shiny string, very nice. Again, he's got in really, really close, and you can make out the detail in every strand of that string. And it also tends to surprise you. I remember when I first started doing macro work with extension tubes on old M42 lenses, and in fact, the shots I took that were on there were just taken with my 350D with a macro filter on the front, which is one of the simplest ways of getting into macro photography. And it's just like a, you know, like your normal UV lens or a polarizing filter you'd put on the front of your camera. It's like that, but it's got a bit more of a curve to it. It just enables your camera to focus a lot closer. And I was amazed by the quality of the photographs you can get. So macro photography is within most of our reaches. And even with compact cameras and bridge cameras, there'll be a macro feature, and the old Fuji S5700 that I shot with for a good couple of years had a superb macro feature. You get right up close to things. Next up, we've got Eka Joe, who's done... I've been trying to guess what camera. I think it might be... I don't know if it's different cameras. I know one of them, one of the shots, looks like a Trip 35, because I'm saying it because it has got like the light sensor that's around the sensor. But I'm not convinced because of the writing that's around there as well. It's some sort of Olympus, probably. Maybe it's a pen or something like one of the pen films. But what I really like about these is tiny depth of field and sensitive application of a tone as well. A slight sepia tone. Looks very nice, actually. Really, really good. Composition is nice. And it shows you what you can do with everyday objects that we as photographers have. You know, one of the great things is our kit is very photogenic, especially older film cameras, with the metal and things like that. And Eka Joe's put together some very nice photographs there. So well done. Photos by Danny B, and he's got this amazing photo of his cat. He's managed somehow to focus so sharply on the eye, the lens. Is it the meniscus? Is it the eyeball of the cat? You can see there's almost like a scar on the cat's eyeball. You can see right into it. It looks like a gem. Looks like a lump of amber. Really, really good. And you can also see the hairs that are around the eye as well. Must have been incredibly difficult to get the cat to sit still for that long. Or maybe it was a case of the way I tend to shoot, which you just take lots of photographs and then you review them afterwards and hopefully one of them is. But again, that shows you the power of macro photography. Something that you would never probably get to see because cats move around too fast. With that, you can look in and go and see the true beauty of nature and in the way that the eyeball is constructed. And then we've got a bit of a fun one with a reflection in a bauble. Very good indeed. Now, ABVDB has done some very interesting things, and he's been using a 350D or Rebel XT, excellent camera, one I use myself, with the 75-300 long telephoto, using close-up filters again. That's what I've been using. And he's been screwing them on top of each other, I could be wrong, and he's got these pictures of salt crystals, so they're very, very close, using the camera like a microscope, and it shows you, you know, you can see this whole other world that we normally wouldn't get to see with our own eyes. And you can turn this simple thing we have, this camera with this lump of glass on the front, to look into this otherwise normally not seen world. So well done for those as well. Fantastic. Big Pick has posted some older photographs, and there's a nice one of a coin, some plants, some eyes and some jewelry. Very good, nice, interesting, different subjects. And finally, we have Ron Riggs, who's... I tell you what, I'm not dead sure. I'm going to click through on that and have a look. Look at it bigger. So it looks like some sort of mushrooms. It does indeed. Let's have a look at it against black. Very nice. Lots of different colours. Lots of different textures. A very unusual subject. And another great example of the thought that... Sometimes we kind of get a bit obsessed with having to go all sorts of different places for photography, when in fact there's probably 20 great photographs within 20 feet of where you're sitting right now. You just need to look harder. Well, there we go. Some fantastic photos for the December assignment. Start thinking about what you'd like to do for 2012. I've put a thread up on the Flickr photo group, so any ideas, just chuck them in there. Everything from very specifics, like, you know, we want to go out and take photographs of churches, through to something like just saying we want to take photographs with the theme of the colour blue. Whatever you want, put it in, get some ideas, and we'll start a new assignment on the 1st of February and get stuck in that way. Remember, if you want to help out the SEL Photography Podcast, if you're on an iPod, go over to iTunes and write a little review of the podcast and give us some stars. That helps to push us up the rankings, which means we can get more subscribers, which means we can get bigger and better sponsors, which is always a good thing. Right, well, it's been a bit of a long podcast, so thanks for downloading and listening to it, and hopefully pretty soon I'll see you on Flickr.